You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You're listening to Creative Quarantine. I'm your host, Angelique Roche. And today on Creative Quarantine, I was excited to sit down with director, writer, producer, all-around creative, Paul Bay, who joined us all the way from the great outer skirts of Vancouver, Canada. And we had a lovely chat about his work as a writer, the differences and how he approaches writing for TV versus big screen versus audio dramas and podcast, and what he's been working on. While he was vague, I gotta say, I'm very intrigued about both of the shows that he's working on right now for Spotify, as well as a couple of other projects he couldn't be very open about, including one TV project. It was a great conversation, just chatting with him about the work he's doing and collaborating across the electronic pathways of email and bringing together such amazing projects as the Black Tapes and Loop. It was a good combo. We had a couple of guest appearances from his dog, which you will hear barking in the background because this is how we do it here at Creative Quarantine. And you know what? That's it for me. You guys have heard my voice enough, and you'll hear it some more during the conversation, but I'm excited for you to hear this conversation. I hope you enjoy it as much as I did.
Let's go.
Thanks, Apple. Thanks, Apple. Great. Oh, hi, everyone. We're sorry that we're starting a little bit late. It seems like Apple had it out for us today, and we've been switching headphones, but no, this is the joy of digital media, right?
Oh, we get Puppy! Oh, hey guys.
I'm going to blame her for the technical difficulties.
Okay. I mean, you know, she's adorable. She can take it. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Creative Quarantine. I'm here with the brilliant screenwriter, podcaster, director, creative entrepreneur, man with great alcoholic taste, Paul Bay. What is up, man?
And let me hide this BC wine out of the way.
Don't hide it. We all
not plugging it, but Jackson Triggs makes a great Cabernet.
Look, I need recommendations. Yeah. The only thing we can get delivered where I'm at is wine. So send them your way.
I'm
send
plugging
my way.
Vancouver today. Wineries. Clothing brands, everything.
Truth be told, I love Vancouver. Vancouver is one of my favorite places in the whole wide world.
I'm very fortunate to be here.
How have you been? I know you've still been working your tail off.
I've been working. So. I've been doing the two, as they announced, like just before the quarantine all started, they announced my two Spotify shows coming up. Amanda Chi and The Ghost Sessions, which is about a high school kid learning she has the power to see ghosts, and Boyland, which is about a K-pop band member going solo back to his home in Los Angeles and starting his solo career from there. It's a lot of fun. I'm getting to work with some really cool people, and I'm not allowed to talk about it too much, except I'm in the writing phase right now. Okay. So they're throwing me production ideas, which is very exciting. I should probably learn Korean at some point.
Not necessarily a thing that you just pick up just lightly, so I can expect that would be somewhat time consuming to learn Korean, but you know, a few words here or there.
I didn't know I didn't speak proper Korean until I was about 23. I'd spoken to my parents, well, you know, but they moved here in 1971 when I was 2 years old. And, you know, they wanted me to fit in. There weren't a lot of Koreans in 71. This is when the first wave of Koreans came in. And I just spoke Korean around the house with my parents. And then at age around 23, 24, my friends overheard me talking to my mom. And everyone stopped talking, just paid attention to me. When I got off the phone, they're like, what the hell were you talking? And I'm like, what? I was talking Korean to my mom. They go, that's not Korean.
No, you're not. No, you're not. Nice try, Paul. Nice try.
Apparently, it's kind of baby Korean. And I confronted my mom about it. I'm like, why did you never correct me? She goes, we thought it was cute. And I'm like, yeah, that's cute. A mid 20 year old.
Thanks, Mom. Set me up for success. Oh, man. Well, for those who may not be familiar with like the idea of scripted podcast and all of the amazing work that you've done just in bringing these fictional stories to life through audio, can you talk a little bit about what it is, the stuff that you've done with The Loop and, you know, all the different things and the start to finish and how that differs from what is your lovely title on the internet of screenwriter? Because they're two very different types of writing and audio experiences.
Yeah. So my buddy Terry Miles, he's an independent filmmaker, quite well known locally, like on the Canadian scene. I was acting in his first movie, and he knew I liked to write. Of course, I knew he of course liked to write. And so we wrote. One day he got some space between films, and he said, "Let's do something. You got a lot of ideas." So I gave him my five best ideas, their log lines. And then he zeroed in on the black tape. There was only the black tape back then, about one mysterious unsolved tape. And we wrote a screenplay in like 4 days, maybe three, somewhere between 3 to 5 days. I did the story outline, and then he did the dialogue, and it was tight. And we gave it to his agent, and it sat there for years. It didn't go anywhere. That was around 2012, and then 2014 is when he came over. Before 2012. But anyways, 2014 is when he said, let's turn it into a podcast. He'd want to do podcasts before. I didn't want to be like two dudes giving our hot takes about, you know, who wants to hear us? We have nothing to offer.
As they call it, a vanity project.
Yeah. it's like, I go, no one wants to hear. I barely want to hear other people's hot takes. I don't want to hear our hot takes. And so out of frustration, when he kept pitching the podcast thing, I'm like, oh, too bad we can't turn the black tape into a podcast. And his eyes went, you know, he's a filmmaker. He thinks in those terms. And when he tried to explain to me how to do it, I'm like, I don't understand. We're going to get your actors? And he goes, yeah. He goes, just start writing. I'm like, okay. He goes, but write for the ear. And when he said that, he just reminded me. He goes, listen to all these audio dramas. We listened to a whole bunch of, War of the Worlds again. And I'm like, oh, that's when it clicked in. We'll try to make it real. I'll try to make it immersive. And it took off. And then The Big Loop was my anthology thing. I find that The Big Loop, I want to try something else where it's just one narrator taking you through their experience. And I got that from one of my favorite shows, Love and Radio, where it's often one person just sharing their story. And they'll talk for over half an hour, but I'm on the edge of my seat. And I thought if I could do that with a fictional story, you know, that's pretty cool, right? One person telling a story. So that's where that came out of. And now, we met on the set of Marvels, and I got to work with Lauren Shippen's wonderful script, right? And she strips the visual. She knows, she has so much experience. We've worked together before, and she knows, like, when I read her stuff, I know exactly how she wants it to sound as soon as I read it on the thing. Like, maybe not exactly, but we have an idea of tone and everything. And so, you know, when I call her, hey, I'm gonna cast Method Man, right? In the thing, she knew exactly how the whole thing's going to now shift, right? And the tensions that you hear in the voice, like it's almost like when you're writing for audio fiction, it feels like you have to heighten all your other superpowers to tell the story, right? And close your eyes and like, how are people going to hear it? Where when I wrote for the screen, when I do TV or when I write for TV, I'm mostly thinking, what are they going to see? So it's almost like taking away something from me. And that is the way I see it, because I started in visual medium, not the audio medium, right? Like I'm not an audio pro. I'm a visual writer first. And so when I had to go to audio, I felt like something was taken away from me. And I felt like I was like in a very dark room. And I'm like, now I have to describe the room that I'm in, as opposed to just showing them the room. but there's other parts of story that you could tell with that. You could tell the history of the room. You could tell what the room makes you feel, the oppressiveness. Instead of just showing it to you, I could tell you what the room is to me. So that's what I found really powerful about the audio medium, and what really brought it alive to me. And so when I'm trying to explain to other people coming into it, I try to tell them, try to express the feeling of things as opposed to what you're supposed to see. Because we're in the audio medium, people assume now I have to describe everything I see. I'm like, no, you don't. In The Big Loop, I have an episode called Goodbye, Mr. Adams. And he moves around. Brigham Snow does a wonderful job, but he never describes what anything looks like. Rarely. Right? It's all feeling. And you can tell from his voice the way he's saying it. Yeah, I got a picture of who he's talking about. I got a picture of this classroom, even though there's zero details. So that's the cool thing about audio. It's a different heightened sense of story.
And I love that, right? Like, you have this ability to take a step back and shift the way you write. Is there a way that you approach the exposition part of the story in introducing the characters differently? Because, you know, folks will never see these characters. They will only get to hear them, get to hear their experiences. But also there's this part about how do you get to know the quirks of being invested in a character when it comes to audio versus when it comes to, you know, having that visual connection to them.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a lot like what you see in TV and movies where the writers often like to pop you into the middle of the story. Right? Mm-hmm. So you're supposed to assume a lot of things. Same thing with audio. I like to pop them into the middle of, like, I'm going to assume that you will trust me to take you along and catch you up with who this character is. Casting for voice is where it all comes in for me. Because once, like, I wrote Goodbye, Mr. Adams, then I thought, I don't have the flavor yet. I need help telling the story. And I can't tell the full story until I know who's going to be telling that story. So when I asked Brigham Snow, are you willing to play this character? He goes, yeah, now I know what this character is going to be. So it's not just in the words that he says, but it's the way he says them that the listener will be like, okay, he's saying this, but I'm feeling that he actually means this underneath it all. And that's the cool part of audio, where I'm really not begging performances out of them, but just hoping to the universe, I hope I cast it right.
Yeah.
I don't like doing casting calls because I, as a former actor, it hurts my, it's always hurt every time I got rejected. Every single time, especially if it's something like I got rejected for a Chinese food delivery guy. I'm like, there's nothing else I can do. This is when you get rejected for that, you go home feeling, I can't be a Chinese food delivery guy. What am I, Mom? I should have been a doctor, like you said. So that you carry that on your shoulders. So I don't want to do that to anybody else. So it's a lot of it's like, listen to everything they've done, their whole oeuvre. That's why I encourage voice actors to put all their stuff online. And I just roll the dice. I'm like, okay, you know what? I'm going to cast you. Even if you're not appropriate, I'll change the lines if I have to, which I've done. But I'm not gonna uncast you once I've done this. And if it then it's on me. It's my fault. I don't want the actor to feel like it's their fault. And that just comes from my acting experience. And I think it comes from a little bit of being a former teacher, right? Like, you know, you never want to put a kid in that position of like that dodgeball picking, like you're last.
And it's hard, man. So, because I do a lot of voiceover now, and now I'm getting into voice acting and narration, and it is that moment where most of my gigs come because my stuff is available online. They're like, "Hey, I saw your thing," and I was like, "What thing did you see? I don't know, but great. Thank you for seeing the thing." and I think it's really interesting because I also think this is, and we've talked about this before. Audio dramas are very collaborative, right? There is a writer, there's a director, there's an audio engineer. Sometimes people are doing multiple positions, but there's kind of like this beautiful trifecta plus of folks who come together to bring together the experience, because I don't think a lot of folks know, particularly when you're dealing with fiction, there are tracks upon tracks upon tracks upon tracks, depending on what kind of fiction it is. Mm-hmm. How do you kind of approach the collaborative part of this? And how has it changed since you've had to kind of rearrange not being in a studio outside of your home?
Well, I haven't got to that part yet on these projects because I'm still in the writing phase. But you know, I'll be honest. I feel sort of guilty for saying this. I live in a very small village. We're removed from Vancouver. Like I say, I'm Vancouver, but we're not that close to Vancouver. It takes me about 45 minutes to an hour to get downtown. From where we're in a small village, we only have about 500 houses, 500 families in this village, and we got one store. It's one of those places where I have to think about, I better fill up my tank before I go home because I don't know when I'm going to get back into. It's one of those places. So everything's been done remotely. Like my whole, like except when Terry used to live here for the first season of Black Tapes, we were together. After that, we were apart doing it remotely, and then I'd get the actors come to my house. He's in Los Angeles. I would tape them all here, send all the audio to him, and he'd do his magic. It's still magic to me because I don't know what it is. Then we'd go back and forth. And I found that like, starting with Terry, going all the way to Misha Stanton, I'd have to explain, Misha was really good. Every step of the way, they're like, so what do you want to hear? Like, for example, Silver Surfer, what do you want the Silver Surfer to sound like? Which is an important question. And all I could explain was, and I use technical language like, but shimmery. Can you make it shimmery? And I felt like one of those, I felt so useless. But Misha, this is the great thing about Misha. When you work with a professional, they've heard this from dunces like me. Explain it this way, and they go, I know what you mean. And then Misha sends me the Silver Surfer. I'm like, they're like, is this what you meant by shimmery? I'm like, beyond, but better. But yeah, that's better than what I imagined it to be. Right? And I love this feeling of like, I'm good at what I do. They're great at what they do. And we just trust each other that we're all gonna, like, if everyone's cast in their role properly, that's the most important part, then you just trust each other. There's no reason to push each other to, like, I've heard of stories of people like, man, these notes and all, pushing each other, and I'm like, yeah, then that's on them. They didn't hire properly, right? At a certain point, you have to let your, I wanna stay a decent human being, even at work, right? I don't wanna compartmentalize. I'm decent at home, I'm an ass at work. Right, I'm a hard ass at work. I'm a gentle person at home. Like at every person, you're you, and so we all got hired properly. We're the best at what we do for this job. That they thought we were the best, and then we're just gonna trust each other. And every step of the way, even Evan, who came in to do the music, try and explain to Evan. Like, thank God he understood me. He goes, "What are you thinking for this theme song?" I'm like, "I want it heroic. It's got to be fantastic." But remember, it's Fantastic Four, so we need a heroic theme, but not like the Avengers theme. It's got to be an original theme, but ominous, because Galactus it's apocalyptic. And Evan's like, gotcha. And it took a few tries, and then I'd be like, less apocalypse? He goes, gotcha. And he's doing the whole different thing. He's so brilliant. I'm like, how do you get all that from my less death? Like, how did he come up with a whole different set of notes?
Less death, more vibrancy.
Yeah. I wish at one point I got a buddy working in AI, and I was joking with him about this. Yeah. And he owns a huge AI company. And I said, one day you guys will have this. He goes, oh, maybe. You just have to say less death, and they'll figure out what you want. I go, how far away are we from that? He goes, oh, not in your lifetime, old man. But still, it's exciting. Maybe not exciting for everyone who wants jobs. It'll end up writing for me too, but... Evan is that machine right now. Like these composers that I work with, they're that every single person. They're like, "What do you want to hear? What's and we always talk in mood, and tone. I go, "Here's this." You lay out the story, and you go, "I want an overlay of beauty, but underneath, just a sense of that it's all about to end." And they're like, "Gotcha."
And it sounds a lot of it is just really intuitive. Like what I'm hearing is like it's a lot of feeling, it's a lot of intuitive, it's a lot of trusting your gut when you've hit that magic point. But also knowing it could always be different because there's so many options and you just gotta make a choice.
Yeah. So circling back to the original question of like, how have I been working and collaborating? It's always been that way. Me online explaining to them, often in emails, I want this so they can look at it and just sort of ponder, what does Paul mean by apocalyptic? And I'm just hoping that they get it. Sometimes they have to hop on the phone. They go, I don't understand what you mean by shorter. Do you want a minute shorter? Do you want it like half truncated? And I'm like, yeah. I'm very vague, but I think I express things emotionally well, so they get the emotion of it. like when Misha got that shimmery.
I think that's probably the best quote ever. How do you want the Silver Surfer to sound? Shimmery. You got it. And I think that's so cool because this idea. So I was very much a novice when I first got into this idea of like what people consider podcasts, which are these like very talky, like there's so many layers of podcasts. So let's be real. Like when people hear podcasts, everyone has their definition of what a podcast is. People, you know, you have your news podcast and your commentary podcast. You've got your conversational podcast. You've got your programmatic podcasts that have tons of tracking and like a narrator that brings you through a story, whether it's fictional or non-fictional. And then you have these audio dramas, which really have, for me, because I'm such an old head at heart, like I was like, oh man, this is like listening to War of the Worlds or listening to In the Shadows or listening to like the old Dick Tracy's, where you have to have this imagination. And you have to be brought through this audio experience. And it's so funny because we choose to do that now. Like that's just, it used to be like, if you want entertainment, everybody sat around the radio and you listened to the same thing because it was three radio stations. And so I think it's just so cool you get to do this, this type of medium. What is it that you personally love about it though? Because I feel like you get really, like I can see you physically get excited about telling stories. Yeah. What is it about audio dramas that you really like?
I think for the type of audio drama that I'm accustomed to producing, I think I like the quickness of it. Terry Miles, again, my partner in the Black Tapes, he loved it too because he's an independent film director. And he said half the time of him is waiting for money to make something. You're waiting for permission. You're waiting for your producers to get the money. Give us 6 months, we'll get the money, now we got the financial backing. And then you have to get permission every step of the way for how things are gonna come about. And that's with you know, film and television and everything. But with things like audio drama or podcasts in general, at the basic level, you don't need permission to proceed. You just need a few rudimentary skills. It's still a threshold you have to cross. Like not everyone has access to this. You still need a computer. You need internet connection, all that stuff. But in terms of threshold, it's the lowest threshold possible to reach a mass audience to tell the story you want to tell. If you have a friend who can act a little bit and you got a friend who can write a bit and you know how to do things on your laptop in terms of mixing and editing, you got it all there. You could tell your story. And I think the thing I love about it most is my mom always reminds me all my life, I love telling stories. I was the storyteller in our group of kids, right? She also liked to remind me, and I was also a bit of a business person. I guess in grade one, I have a vague memory of this, but in grade one, I invited all the kids around the block on Halloween to come to my haunted house. And my brother was a great artist. Like he's a professional artist now, but I saw him when he was in like, maybe I was grade two, he was grade one. And he would design a whole, through our cellar room, our crawl space, he would design a whole like maze of scary things. And I'd take the money at the front and I'd be the barker getting kids in and then leading them out. And they'd give me 10 cents. I keep 7 cents, my brother keeps 3 because I'm the brain, he's the lead. You know? But that's the way I thought when I was young.
Really? 70, 30,
that's really what happened. 70, 30, my brother was so fake. I'm telling this story because I know my brother's watching and he's like, I know, I should be shamed. But that's the way I thought. I'm like, I'm in Canada now. I'm going to make me some money off the backs of other people's labor. So if we would do that, and I'd be that kid. And I think I'm tapping into, like, I'm trying to make a living telling these stories and having people come in my carnival ride, my oral carnival ride, and just having a lot of fun with it. And maybe having an hour where they forget all their troubles and, you know, I think a lot of people have that inclination. I want people to forget the world for an hour, trust me to take them through an experience, and hopefully at the end of that, I get something where I can help pay the rent.
I feel like that's fair. Yeah. Fair. But I love that. And now all I want is you to do a horror podcast about two kids having a haunted house.
I was trying to think the other day, maybe I shouldn't talk about this, but I was trying to think of a horror podcast to do just on my own that I could just put out there on my feed. But it's really hard to tell the story like without the I got work to do that I'm getting paid for. But this part, the horror story is fun. It's really fun for me to do. So if I could find some time to do it, I was like, but it's really just like one idea I had was like, okay, close your eyes. You got to listen to me for 10 minutes now. And if you can listen to me for 10 minutes with the lights off, eyes closed, listen to my voice, and you could reward yourself with a drink or something like that. It's just called Trust Me. And I just take it for 10 minutes, right?
I want it. Like,
right? That'd be kind of cool, right?
The funny thing is, a lot of people don't know that you used to be a comedian. And so now all my brain is saying, you're now the R.L. Stein of podcasting, and I want it. I want it now.
But this is something
But for adults,
yeah. It requires more writing because it's adults, right? For kids, yeah. It's easy. Like in high school, I used to tell these stories every year to my high school students. My Mr. Bay's Hour of Horror every Halloween, one hour of new scary stories. If you go to Templeton, they have a Facebook page. The last high school I taught at, one of the last high school I taught at in my first stint of teaching. Sorry, it's complicated, but I guess I dismissed a class before telling them it was all a joke, that all my stories are not true. And word got around that the third floor women's bathroom was haunted. And so I guess on the Templeton, you know, Facebook page, this is several years ago, I saw the thing, Templeton's haunted, and I saw my stories on there. And
I was I made those up.
Yeah, and one of my students, Julia, she popped in, she goes, oh, LOL, my I was there when Mr. Bay, this teacher that used to be here, made this up. I was there. It's not true.
And it's then not
I like, oh, it's true. I read it in the newspaper. My older sister told me, my aunt told me, like, all this. It was all made up. People just start making up stuff, right? But it confirms what they want to believe.
When a story is good, man. But that's the brilliance of like a show like. So the first podcast I ever like cling to, like, and I listened to other podcasts was Lore. And the reason why I loved it is because it talked about that weird space between truth and fiction and the creation of lore and the creation of all of these horror stories and the idea of vampires and these concepts of ghosts and how even Chucky. So the funny thing is, so do you know the story? You know the story of the doll that created Chucky, right?
Yeah, the possessed one.
The possessed one that's in Key West.
Yeah,
So the funny thing is, I'm actually interviewing Fiona Dourif, who is Chuck, the daughter of the real daughter of the voice of Chucky.
Yeah.
Who was part of the Chucky franchise. And I was like, did you know this story? And she's like, no. And I was like, yeah, no, Chucky's real. Chucky's in a museum in Key West. Chucky's a real thing. They do believe the doll killed people. And now the house is like an Airbnb. People love that stuff though. It's so interesting how folks love this concept of a real good horror story. Like people love good stories, but something about a real good horror story, you're just like.
I remember 2015, speaking of the horror and the line that blurs between fact and fiction, we had Aaron Mankey on the Black Tapes as the real Aaron Mankey promoting his new book. And our Alex Reagan, who's not real, interviewing him as if this was all real as a special Black Tapes episode. And this is when Laura was just about to get big and Black Tapes is about to get big. And, you know, Aaron had this fan following. We had one, but it was a nice crossover. Sorry, I got distracted there because as soon as I think about Aaron, we've become good friends through all of this. And as soon as I think of him, I just got the sense of like, when's the next time I'm going to see all these people? That's what I miss. Even though podcasting is sort of like you're on your own as you're experiencing.
Yeah.
I missed the first time I saw Aaron and the first time I saw Lauren and then the next time I saw them and sitting down and having drinks. Like I'm thinking of that right now as I'm talking to you. Like I remember meeting you in New York I'm talking to you here, which is great, but I miss being in person with people.
Right? Well, and a lot of people think because podcasters are always in studios or podcasters are, you know, doing their all this audio things, like podcasters get together a lot. A lot. Like there are conferences, there are conventions. I remember, and, you know, it's taken on a life kind of like Blogger and all these other things when like blogging had become big. Like folks are like at certain points, you do sit down and you do collaborate and you do meet people and you build these relationships internationally.
Yeah.
Because it's inherently an international medium.
Yeah. Yeah, it's I can't wait till, I don't know when it's going to be, but I can't wait till the next event where we could all get the first big podcasting event where we're allowed to physically be together. There's going to be a lot of drinking, I think. I think there's going to be a lot of partying.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. There would have been anyway, but yes. So for you, I know you're working on two projects right now. Are there any other things that you're kind of like taking this time when you're not traveling, you're kind of, you know, having this space? Is there anything else you're working on creatively or like not working on because you need the space? Or are you just playing with the dog?
I have a TV project in development. It's been in development for a while. I'm not allowed to talk about it. It's their announcement to give. But it's been in development for a while. I've been just furiously
writing.
Yeah, just writing. So it's been fun though. It's fun working with people who you know what they've made in the past, and they're hoping you can sort of pull yourself up and they're encouraging me. Like sometimes I'll write stupid stuff and I won't even notice it, and they'll find a gentle way to without crushing me. You know, in TV, could you? I'm like, oh yeah, that's what I should have done, right? and they could easily just crush me, just say, listen, you know, you're with pros now, you need to do this. But instead, they're like gently bringing, because they know I'm coming from a different world. I like working with professionals who are still decent human beings, very good human beings at work, at home. It's been a lot of fun. So that I've been working on that, and pitching. For some reason, I'm still pitching stuff in LA remotely.
Why not?
Yeah, right. So it's like, I think right now it's at the point where it's like there's a, I don't know what's, but Spotify has been so encouraging, right? And they just want to know, you know, what else you got, right? Everyone wants to know, like, what do you have now? The next thing, and I can only write so much. I'm looking forward to the moment where I get enough projects. Like Aaron Mankey, speaking of Aaron, he's got enough projects where he can like pay writers, like, here's the idea, take it, right? And they can go with it, right? I want to, like, sort of like the TV system. I can't wait till that, so you can hire and employ a bunch of people whose work I respect, who I think deserve a larger spotlight. I know a ton of those audio drama writers that I'm like, why aren't they huge, right? And so I can't wait to like have a big enough platform where I could sort of bring them along, and we could all sort of like make a living together.
I love it though, because that's the dream, right? I think at the end of the day, like even on this show, like we have a production team and we've got someone who's doing the recaps, and you know, it's a little baby production, but you want to make sure that everyone gets a chance to have that creativity. Because a lot of us, it's life. Like if we don't get to create, then what are we doing?
Yeah.
And I think that was the biggest thing that, you know, I wanted to have these conversations to show that people are still creating, people are still working, people are still finding ways. And Byron Isaac said it so well. He's like, you know, we might have concrete on us, but creativity will find its way through the concrete. Yeah. We just got to figure out how.
Sometimes grass helps, using the concrete metaphor.
Grass does help. Grass, flowers, you know. Yeah. So for those who are new to your work, because I'm hoping that we do get, you know, folks who may be just be getting into podcasts, where can folks find your work, Paul Bay?
Oh, it's on what's the phrase we always say? On your favorite app player, the Big Loop Podcast. Basically just go to my Twitter feed, you'll see the links at Mr. Paul Bay, or my Instagram at Mr. Paul Bay, and you'll see the links for the Big Loop Black Tapes, and Spotify will announce the shows when they come up. If they pick it up, if they get to the final, I'm still wrapping my head around how we're going to record this thing. Cause we're now at the bigger level. I'm not used to working with that kind of budget. So we'll see. So just my Twitter and my Instagram that you should be able to find everything. You can see my dogs and hang out with me there.
I do enjoy all of the dog pictures. brings me joy. So thank you so much for being with us today. This was great. Also, like, good luck on everything.
Thanks so much for having me. This is a lot of fun. I love doing this.
All right. So, guys, make sure you're tuned in tomorrow. It's Wednesday. My brain just completely fried on who's going to be here tomorrow. Please don't judge me. The person who is, Quinn Peoples. Oh, my gosh. Showrunner, EP. So, we've been having, like, a little bit of a a wave of really cool creatives and actors this week. So screenwriter tomorrow, we've got Quentin Peoples, who's The Last Ship, Marvel's Runaways, several different other shows that people I am sure have watched, who's actually been doing free screenwriting classes during this time as his way of being creative and giving back. And he will be on the show tomorrow. But I want to say thank you again, Paul, for being here. And I'll see you on the interwebs.
I'll see you there. Miss you.
Miss you too.
Creative Quarantine is hosted by Angelique Roche. It's produced by Angelique Roche, Sarah Storm, and Matt Storm. Our logo is designed by Aaron Leffler. New streaming episodes are available Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern, and Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern on AngeliqueRoche.com/creativequarantine. Podcasts are made available the morning after each live streamed episode, wherever you get your podcasts. Please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and visit us on Instagram at creative.quarantine and Twitter at creativeqtine. Please send this to a friend who needs a little artistic company and stay at home if you possibly can. We'll see you soon.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.